Real people, real conversations. From the American Shopman of PA Studio, it's the PuffCast.
It's time for another episode of the PuffCast. Today's show brought to you by QuickSave Coupons. Save money on the places you already go to and download the QuickSave Coupons app today. In the studio with us, we have Danny Albert. So why is Danny Albert in here? Well, you started something called Hero in the Fight. And I want you to talk to us a little bit about your backstory, why you started Hero in the Fight, because maybe a lot of people haven't heard about it. And I think this is a really good movement that you're doing. And I think it's also a good time for it because it does involve recovery, mm-hmm. right? And September is National Recovery Month. So, Danny, number one, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Tell us all about yourself, why you're doing this. I mean, this is a lot of your time and your effort. And you also, and we'll talk about, you have a full-time job as well that I know takes up a ton of your time. So, like, I think it's very admirable of you to do all this. So, go ahead. Take it away.
Yeah. So, my name's Danny Albert. I'm a person in long-term recovery. And what that means for me is I haven't had a drink or a drug since April 30th, 2017. That being said, it was a long road to that date, right? Mm-hmm. And as that date came up, things got worse and worse for me. Hero in the Fight, a little bit about that. That was created to break the stigma of addiction and raise awareness towards the impact it has on individuals, families, and in our communities. We do a lot of events in the community to let people know you can have fun without the use of a substance, right? Because for a long time in life, I didn't think that was possible.
Right.
Like if I went to Hershey Park, I went to the movies. For me, I felt like I had to elevate those experiences by using a substance. And now today I know that I was never fully there and appreciating the moments like I can now, right? With that, through Hero in the Fight, we've partnered with Penn State Harrisburg, the Harrisburg Senators. I was on the baseball field for a Recovery Day ball game pre-COVID, and Steph was the announcer and introduced me, you know, and all of the things that come with that. We've been able to have certified recovery specialist trainings. So there are over 20 certified recovery and family recovery specialists that went through a training that was hosted by Hero in the Fight. You know, Recovery House scholarships, Bethesda Mission. There's so many things that we've been able to do through Hero in the Fight organization. And really what it is just an avenue that was created for people to give back. And it's a grassroots initiative. And all of the energy and time I put into that really doesn't feel like work because it does so much for me doing things for other people. That's a little bit about Hero on the Fight. We'll talk more about that.
Sure. So, okay. Well, what was the date since the last time you had anything?
April 30th, 2017.
All right. So 4 years.
4 years. Yeah.
What was your rock bottom moment? Did you have one or did you just one day say I'm done?
Did
you have several?
It was a bunch of low moments that just got worse.
Yeah.
I've been to more than one treatment facility. Where do I even start with that? Right. one of the lowest moments I've had is when my daughter Caden, who first off, she listened to the Morning Madhouse every morning. And I told her I was coming on to do this and you asked me to do this. She was so stoked.
Good.
Her mom as well. She's now 9. And
9, that was our target demo.
It was the
9 year olds, yep.
It was perfect. You had the market on that. You know, I had a child. And I wasn't ready to have a kid, and that pushed me into almost like a spiral because I couldn't take care of myself. How am I going to take care of a kid? I'm living with my parents, and from then forward, it went from alcohol and uppers to like oxy and heroin. Right. So like my spiral went deeper and deeper, the more that the pressure weighed on me. And
so the more responsibility you had, the more you were being irresponsible.
That's accurate. Yeah. Gotcha. Yep. And it was almost like a you know, it was an escape from the real world, escape from my problems. At that point, even though I said it earlier on, I wanted to elevate my experiences, but I really didn't want to feel anything, right? And all of the feelings that came along with knowing I had a kid on the way, not being ready, kind of, you know, pushed me forward a little faster, like I like to say. But, you know, one of the worst moments, there's a couple of them that are the catalyst to really putting it all in to want to change, but one of them was the day of my daughter's birth. And, you know, her mom said that her water broke. And I said, are you sure? Right? Like, are you sure?
Are you sure you're pregnant even?
Yeah. Is this the time?
She just didn't get fat.
You know, and in my mind, it was like, wow, I don't have substances. How am I going to stay through 2 days in the hospital? Mm-hmm. I got to have something. So on the way to the hospital, I had Caden's mom, Lindsay, pull over to an ATM and pull out money for me, right? And I think I said it was like pay for a bill or something like that. And we got to the hospital and I left. And then I came back. And while I'm at the hospital, I have this camcorder and I'm videotaping this supposed to be a great moment.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know, it's really sad to see the video footage. It's really sad. Yeah. And, the first time I held my daughter, I could barely hold her. I was just like, you know, just like still, because I didn't want to drop her and all of the things. And, you know, the selfishness of me, not only did I ruin that moment, but like I ruined it for her mom.
Right.
Right. And all of the pain that causes. And when it came time to, you know, take the last name, it my daughter's last name is not Albert. And, you know, you would think, you know, looking back, I can see all of the reasons why that would happen. But when that happened, that was tough. My uncle was there. My dad was there. You know, and here they are. I'm buying all these Christmas gifts before with Caden Albert on them. And now she's Caden Soliday, right? So that was rough for me. But you know, I did what I always did is I ran away from those feelings to a substance, right? And it got worse. And Caden's mom and myself moved in together. We wanted to try to make it work. And it got worse. I ended up my timelines are not the greatest, but I think it was maybe 2013, and I moved back home with my parents, and there was, you know, it got worse, and Lindsay picked up and moved to Philly, right, to protect our daughter and to be, you know, farther away from me, and, you know, rightfully so, you know, but at the time, you know, my thought process was, how can you take my kid from me?
Right, right. You don't mean you're not thinking clearly.
No.
So you think everything is against you when in reality it was to protect your daughter.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And you know, I'm waking up in the morning just like knowing that my daughter isn't in my life the way I want her to. And it really got to a point where, you know, I didn't care to be alive anymore, right? But I cared too much about getting high to like want to kill myself. Like, that's where I was at. I was in this really bad place, like this really bad place that I was willing to do whatever it took, no matter what, to continue my substance use, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that went on to, you know, I have multiple DUIs. First DUI I ever had was on my way to Millersville University. And I was checking out the college because I had just accepted a full ride academic scholarship to Millersville University.
That's the bad part too, because you were smart.
Yeah.
Right. So you're smart, but you're, you know, ruining that potential.
Yeah.
A full ride.
Yep.
For academics, or were you a good athlete?
For academics.
Okay. So I mean, what a waste that could have been.
It ended up being.
Well, We'll talk about the turnaround. We'll talk about the turnaround.
Yeah, yeah, all
maybe,
right. Yep,
maybe
yep,
not
yep.
so much. But,
you're right. You're right.
But, you know, that's so many times we hear stories about people who drugs or violence or whatever, and they always say, like, well, he was a good student, or he was a good athlete, or she was a good student, or she, you know, she had so much potential, or whatever. And then that gets taken away from them because of their choices. Mm-hmm. So that's the path you were headed on. Is like, you seem like a smart guy who was, you know, had a, like you said, a full ride, mm-hmm. and just pissed it away.
Mm-hmm.
So, do you remember the day? Like, okay, so the day you decided to get clean.
Mm-hmm.
What was the turnaround like? Why all of a sudden was it that day?
Okay, so I had pending charges for retail theft.
What'd you steal?
Went into a Target, and I would go to a Target, and I would steal video games and clothes. Like, some of my daughter's Christmases were all, everything was stolen. Every single item was stolen, right? And I'm wrapping these items up, and they don't have the packaging. And Caden's stepdad now, he worked for like retail theft security.
He saw the right? signs?
So he knew. And he even got a gift from me. And he knew it, right?
Does it still have the security thing on it?
Yeah. It was bad. But, you know, it got to the point where I would go into the GameStop and you'd have to show him your ID. And I was using it so many times that there was a red flag on me. And they would, you know, these items are new. Why are you handing us brand new Nintendo Wii video games and controllers?
Yeah.
And then I would, you know, say, oh, my dad got me this for Christmas. I don't have a Nintendo Wii. It was just a whole lot of manipulation. And it got to the point where I couldn't go in anymore. So I asked someone else to go in for me. And this guy that I sent in after I took items from a Target went in, and then the next thing you know, the police come. And they come to my vehicle. You know, in my pocket, I had a wallet, and I was an IV user, and I had a needle in my pocket. And the officer asked me if I had anything in my pocket, and I said no. And he almost stuck himself.
Oh, no.
And he was so pissed. He said he was going to throw the book at me. And, you know, I got charges for, there's no way I took over $500 in items, but top tier is 500 or more, for misdemeanor one. And they had me at 501, right? Like, so yeah, he was pissed. Yeah, yeah. And for a long time, I thought that, you know, why did I send this guy in there? He's the reason that I got caught.
Right, not you.
Not me.
Not your actions.
No, but it was my game plan to send him in there.
Right.
So, right. But, you know, and honestly, no, hindsight, that's one of the best things that could have ever happened. Right. I knew that I had court coming up, and I had already been to treatment once before. And I started outpatient at PA Counseling Services, and Maria was my counselor, and I couldn't pass a urine. Like, I couldn't. And after two or three, they discharge you from the program.
Like, after two or three fails?
After two or three fails, if you don't go to treatment. And I knew that if I got discharged and they saw that at court, that it was not going to be good.
Yeah.
So, you know, she asked me to take a urine for like the third time. And I said, I can't. I'll go to treatment. And I went to P18 Challenge. And
so how old are you right now at this point?
So 32, 31.
When all this happened, you were 31?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yep. Yeah.
So
still living with my parents at like 30.
So you went to, what's it called? PA what?
PA Counseling Services.
Okay.
And then PA Teen Challenge.
Teen
Challenge. So it's
and
PA.
You're 30 years old, and you went to PA Teen Challenge.
They call it PA Adult and Teen Challenge now, but yeah, there's adults and teens.
Oh, that'd be weird. Sorry,
that
was a weird name. Good change.
Yeah,
good change, guys.
Yeah.
So that was the rehab. facility.
That was the rehab facility. Yeah.
And this is how, this is your third one, fourth one?
This is my second one.
Second one. And did you go to that same one before, or was it a different
one? I went to Gaudenzia Common Ground. It was on Front Street in Harrisburg. And it was literally two blocks from where I would frequent Division Street, you know?
So at this point, throughout your life, are you just hanging out with people who are doing the same thing? Or are you just trying to live a normal life and trying to hide it? Like, were you functioning for the most part?
Yeah, so I lived a life full of, like, secrets and hidden. Mm-hmm. I would go hang out with a lot of the same people we know, and they wouldn't do the same things that I was. I didn't want them to know.
Sure, so you'd maybe start the night with them and then end it someplace else? Or start the,
I would,
you know
I would,
what I mean? You'd, where'd Danny go? He just disappears every now and again.
I would disappear every now and again, right, mm-hmm. and go into a bathroom. And, you know, I was having two or three drinks and being blackout wasted.
In two or three drinks?
But it was because it was more than just the drink.
I was going to say, I was about to call you lightweight.
Yeah, no, it was more than just that, right? Tristan used to bartend. I know you had Tristan on your show here. Tristan used to bartend at the Quarter.
Yep.
And I would go to the Quarter upstairs and hang out with a bunch of my friends. Mm-hmm. And but no one knew it was on that level. Like, I don't think they did. Yeah. There were some people that did, right? But even, I was such a selfish person that anyone that did use IV use or use substances I didn't want them to know what I had because I didn't want them to have what I had.
Right.
So okay. It was just, like, secretive.
Yeah. So, when you went into that second time, that rehab facility, that was, like, was that it? Like, after that, you never took another anything?
After that, but it didn't start off that way. So before I went in there, I didn't think there was a way out for me, mm-hmm. right? I really didn't. I didn't think that recovery would be possible for me. I didn't. I drove up my daughter's mom and her sister and Caden in the back seat. And I had substances on me, you know.
Do you think you were going to sneak them in there or what?
And I did.
Okay. Didn't check you?
Well, I did before I got checked. So, like, I took it up there and used.
Oh, man. You had a whole plan.
Had a whole plan. I would always try to have these grand schemes, all these plans. And, you know, I got in there and... you know, 2 days went by, 3 days went by, and there was a guy named Dylan, who's no longer with us, that used to open up this blue book, and he would read from it every day. And I would sit next to him, and I would close my eyes, and I would ask him to read a paragraph to me. And I was like, you know, I started to realize I would color pictures for my daughter and I would mail them to her and she would mail them back. And there was one day where I was talking to a guy and he said, "What's the number one thing in your life?" I said, "My daughter." He said, "I'm sick of hearing that." He said, "You need to be number one in your own life for your daughter to be there." And when he said it to me, I'm like, who is this guy talking to me like that? Right. Mm-hmm. And I went to bed. And I woke up and I thought, man, that might be one of the most powerful things anybody's ever said to me, right? Like, I got to put me first if I want my daughter to be there. And then the next day or two, I got a phone call. So you got 10 minutes a week where you're able to have a phone call. And my daughter's on the phone and she said, "Dad, I just don't want you to be sick anymore," right? And, you know, her mom told her I was sick and that Dad was going to get better. And I thought, I have a kid. I need to be in her life, right? And I'm willing to do whatever it takes. I'm willing to do whatever it takes. And I just gave it a chance. I let go of reservations of wanting to leave and go use a substance and all of those things. And I gave it a chance. And I had a counselor who I couldn't relate to. He was a Grateful Dead guy. He was like 40 years older than me. And I just couldn't relate to anything he was saying. But I would sit at a table at lunch with a group of guys that it was like their eighth or ninth treatment facility. And at first I thought, these guys don't know anything. They can't figure it out.
Right.
And as I hear them talk and I start listening and paying attention to what they're saying, you know, one guy's going to go to Florida because he wants to wake up and enjoy life every single day by a beach. I'm like, wow, yeah. I couldn't tell you the last time I enjoyed life.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great game plan. And another guy said, you know, I said, well, he was like, what are you going to do when you leave here? I said, I'm going to go back home to Steelton in my parents' house. And he said, man, you should really think about moving into a recovery house. And I thought about it, and you know, I didn't have any money,
mm-hmm.
you know. And I called New Insights, and you needed like $120 for your first week's rent with a $20 security deposit. And I called my parents, and I said, this is what I want to do. And my parents said, well, if you don't come home, we're not going to support you anymore. And, you know, in their mind at the time, they wanted to have an eye and keep an eye on
me.
Sure,
and I kind of understand that. Like, because let's be honest, you didn't give them much of a reason to trust that, to trust you.
100%.
So, I mean, I understand where they're coming from, but it also seemed like at this point you were being pretty proactive and like, this is what's best for me to do this. I mean, I understand you got a recovery house, so it's a bunch of addicts,
mm-hmm.
right? So all it takes is maybe one
mm-hmm.
to mm-hmm. score something, and then all of a sudden you guys, I mean, maybe I'm wrong. I don't really know that world too much, but I get it. But at the same time, that's got to be a hard pill to swallow. It's got to be a hard thing to hear from your parents.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny that you say that because in my mind, it's there's a group of people that are willing to do what it takes to do the right thing for them and to put themselves first in an environment where people are doing the right thing. And it's not always that way,
mm-hmm.
but it's hard to convey to your parents on a 10-minute phone call when they haven't talked to you in 3 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, they're... And I took that as, like, pain and hurt.
Yeah, I can see that.
And I used it as motivation, too. Right?
It motivation in terms of I'm going to prove them wrong?
Yeah, somewhat.
Yeah.
Somewhat. All of the things.
Right? Instead of I'm going to make him proud of me, it's I'll show you. This time's going to be different.
Yep.
Makes sense.
Yep.
So how long were you in the rehab facility?
So it was a short-term facility. It was a 30-day program.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, before I went, another thing that was a catalyst for me to go is I had just gotten a job at the Cork and Fork restaurant,
mm-hmm.
just gotten a job. And
that's one of the things I was going to talk to you about is like during this time of abuse and use and everything throughout your 20s, basically. Right.
Mm-hmm.
What did you do? Like, how did you make money? Did you have a career? Did you just job to job to job to job? I mean,
yeah.
How did you make the money to get the stuff that you were abusing? Besides the besides the selling of Wheeze.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll backtrack and come back to that.
Sure.
Like so when I was in high school, it went from like partying on the weekends,
mm-hmm.
and my parents wanted me to be safe, so they would say, well, just drink at the house.
Yeah, so, a lot of parents say that.
And
I want you to drink here.
Yep, yep, so we don't want you driving.
Yeah, yeah.
And I pushed the limits on that, so I started having people over.
We're like, fine, I'm going to rage here.
Yeah, yeah. My younger brother would have school the next day. They would be sleeping, and we would be allowed downstairs, right? And then it turned into, like, me smoking marijuana every day.
Mm-hmm.
And it turned to the point where, like, I needed a substance every day. Probably around 11th grade or 12th grade where I needed it every day. And, you know, if I didn't have money and I needed to get my substance, I found a way to do it. And, you know, we got into robbing houses. And I would, you know, drive around the neighborhood and I would look for the house that the grass wasn't cut, the car didn't move, newspaper was still there, and would go and come back the next day. And if it was like that, that was the house that we would go up to. And I was the guy that would knock on the door, right? And sometimes people answered the door. And I would be like, ah, I'm looking for Stacy. It's a blind date. She lived on at a blue house on 3rd Street. I would always try to, you know, have a grand scheme of manipulation. And a lot of times they didn't know the difference. They were none the wiser.
Yeah.
Right. And you know, that coupled with getting pulled over, and I was not sober, and the cop pulled me over, and I talked my way out of a DUI. So these two things, like,
you almost feel invincible.
I felt invincible.
Right. You're like, I felt, this is easy. I don't know how are people getting caught.
Yeah.
I think the problem is, and we, you know, you touched on your scholarship, is that you maybe you were too smart for your own good.
Yes.
Right? So you're like, the problem is that most people do this stuff, they're idiots. Not me. I'm Danny. I'm smart.
Mm-hmm. And then the ego that comes along with that.
Mm-hmm.
And all of the things. But yeah, no, that, and then when I went to college in Millersville University, I failed out. I was like, partied every day, right? I would skip a class, and I would think, I got to make it to the next class. Then I wouldn't go to that, and then it was a wrap.
Yeah.
It was a wrap. You know, somehow I made it through the first semester, barely, but from the classes I did show up to, and then the second one was failed out, and my parents had to pick me up. And I drove in the back seat, and I remember, you know, I felt like, everyone that thought I didn't deserve this academic scholarship, I proved them right.
Right.
Right. Now I'm going back home to live with my parents. And all the shame and guilt and pain behind that. And I got into the restaurant industry, and I was a bar back at a place called Crockenberry's while on house arrest from that DUI still. So from like 18 to 31, I was on probation, most of it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I got into the restaurant industry, and Crockenberry's closed. And I went over to TGI Fridays, and I met a lot of people that I'm friends with today. And I got some serving experience. And that's probably where it really kicked off for me, my substance use. I mean, you know, you hear me talk about using, but that's when it elevated a little bit as well. Cocaine and things like that.
Well, yeah, you're at TGI Fridays. You can start affording the big stuff, the expensive stuff, the cocaine.
Yeah.
TGI Fridays, we don't smoke pot.
No.
We use cocaine.
Oh,
that's not an endorsement from TGI Fridays.
No.
Don't sue me.
This was years and years ago. This is a different time. But I survived it.
Good.
Which is a statement in itself.
A lot of people, I'm sure, when they get out of places, especially the chain restaurants like a TGI Fridays, you're like, oh, I don't know how I survived that job. But you actually mean it.
Yeah.
not necessarily that job, but that time. Mm-hmm. Of that experience. So,
and with a lot of people that I worked with, we've been able to like come together and help others.
That's fantastic.
So it's a really beautiful thing.
And yeah, we'll get into that, but there is a, you know, there's still time before we reach that point.
Yeah.
So you eventually, do you go to the recovery house? Do you eventually go there?
Later on.
No, after you get out of.
Oh.
Yeah. So now we're jumping back where we were.
I go into the recovery house.
Okay, so, and what is that like?
So, I had given Caden's mom like $140 before I went to treatment. Told her to hold it for me. Because I knew that it would be gone if I didn't do that. So, she let me have that for the first week's rent, right? And Cork and Fork kept my job for me.
That's awesome.
I called the owner, Nick Laus.
Yeah, he was a good guy.
Really good guy. Mm-hmm. And he said that, do whatever you need to do, take care of you. You will have your job when you come back, right? So like, I didn't have that pressure. Like, that was part of the pressure too. It's like,
what are you going to do?
What are you going to do? My daughter comes into the house. She wanted to check and make sure there was no bad people in the house. So we come in, she's checking the house, making sure we're good. You're good, Dad. You know what I mean? Oh, so you know, looking back, it's so beautiful. Like I'm blessed to have those things. But I move into the recovery house, and how do I get groceries?
Right.
So my, you know, Caden,
you gotta sell more weeds, man. Only this time you're buying bananas and stuff.
Oh, and you know, Caden's grandma, her mom's mom, put groceries in my fridge.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I think that's important when you, when you're going through anything, like having a support system is, I mean, it's more valuable than pretty much anything else.
And you're talking, I caused so much harm. I put myself in a position where I had to break away from everyone that I knew as a friend. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I felt all alone. And even while they were helping me out, I still didn't feel like love. Like I couldn't feel the love that was being shown.
Right.
But yeah, no. And I went back to work at Cork and Fork. And Nick said to me, he said, listen, he said, call me every day. So I would call Nick Laus every day about things I was going through. And whether it be someone at the house next door using substances and what should I do, my recovery, all of the things that start popping up, right? I'm on probation. I can't have police contact. And two of my roommates are getting into a fight. There's substances at my house. My daughter comes to this house. How do I confront this person? Like, all, like I didn't know how to navigate life, right? Like I, so many years I used the substance that now I'm like faced with feelings and emotions and I don't know how to process them because I've been spent years running away from them. And he would answer that phone every day. So slowly, you know, I was a server, I would make money and I would consistently pay rent and, I set goals. And my first goal was 90 days, I want to take my daughter to Hershey Park.
Mm-hmm.
Now, before that, when I first got out, I wanted to, and her mom didn't want me to take her right away. And you got to keep in mind, before that, like, I lost my daughter at Hershey Park for a few minutes.
Oh, man.
And my daughter still remembers that.
Oof.
Right? And it was at a young enough age to where, hopefully, it doesn't affect her in the future. I don't know.
Sure.
Right? But 90 days hit, and I took my daughter to Hershey Park, right? And it was beautiful. It was the best. I always took Caden to Hershey Park, and now I was able to like see life through her eyes at the park. And we were standing in line for the Super Duper Looper, and she's 5 at this time. And she's not tall enough to get on the Super Duper Looper, but I put her hair in a bun so that way she could get on. And she was so scared. And I said, listen, I want to take a picture of you. Give me your brave face. I took a picture of her. And we went on the Super Duper Looper. And I thought, you know, I'm asking her to be brave. I need to be brave myself.
Yeah.
Right? Fun fact, she still doesn't want to go on the Super Duper Looper.
Yeah, show that brave
she's
face.
9. She'll go on Laugh Track. She wants to go on the Great Bear. She still won't go on the Super Duper Looper.
All right. So you're hitting these goals. You're hitting these milestones. You know, mm-hmm. and I know that like my uncle, he was alcoholic his whole life, and he got clean in the mid-90s, and he'd been clean since he pretty much since he not pretty much he was clean. It didn't had it was I came and do math, but he was clean from the mid 90s up until he passed away on New Year's Eve, this past New Year's Eve.
Hmm.
So,
sorry to like, hear that.
He was a good dude, but I know like he lived with us for a couple years, so the one day at a time thing, mm-hmm. you know, makes sense. And then sometimes I guess it's hard to see that one day at a time eventually leads up to a week at a time, then it leads up to a month. Before you know it, that one day at a time doesn't seem so big anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, right? That makes sense.
Yeah.
So 90 days, so you know, 91 day at a time,
mm-hmm.
you get to hit this amazing milestone and you're so excited about it. It's something that you'll remember forever. What are some other milestones do you remember that you hit? What are some other goals that you hit?
So it's just like anything. If you're climbing a mountain, right? I try not to look at the top. I try to look right in front of me mm-hmm. because I know it's a hill. Yeah. And even earlier on, I'm like, man, why doesn't everyone see that I'm doing this for real this time? I've BS'd so many times in the past, but yet, like, I want this validation for the things that I'm doing from all these people that I caused harm for.
Right. It's the cry wolf thing.
Oh, it's so, so like all of these feelings I would just write in a notebook every single night. But no, I had, that was 90 days. I think it was, we had a year milestone of, I think everyone took me out to dinner at Coda Restaurant. I think that was at 1 year. Christian DeLutis owned a place called Coda. And, but it was just like being able to get to these milestones so that way I could, one, celebrate it with people that I loved. Right.
And that's but at the same time, I get it. You're also fighting for yourself.
And yeah.
So then you could say, but, you know, I understand, but I've done this, 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 and this because I've been clean for this amount of time. So, I mean, I understand, like, yeah, it's a way of celebrating, but it's also a way of saying, no, it's different this time, and here's my proof.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're going into court with evidence. Here's exhibit A, B, C, D, you know? I think that's important for anyone. It's not, and that guy that said that thing to you about looking after yourself first, I mean, and it's stuck with you since.
Mm-hmm.
It's true, because there is a stigma.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes with this stuff, and you had to fight against that,
mm-hmm.
right? You had to show people, yeah, I get it. I understand what you're saying, but there is, you know, there are people that come out of this better people. There are people that come out of this ready to be functioning members of society and members of family units and friend units and all that other stuff. So I think it is important that you keep track of that, not just for yourself, but to kind of, here's my clean resume. You know what I mean? These are all the things I've done.
And all those things add up without even, you know, when we're sitting here talking about goals and milestones, now it's to the point where my friends will do stuff for me for a milestone. And I'm not so much looking for those gratifications. I'm more focused on, okay, well, you know, setting goals like, all right, early on it was like, I need to get a bank account. I need to go to the gym.
Right.
So for me now, today, it's like, all right, well, I'm going to wake up and meditate every day. All right, well, I need to go to the gym 2 times a week. You know, realistic, attainable goals that I yo-yo on, right? Like, I don't always meditate. I don't always go to the gym.
Yeah, me neither.
I don't always run. Yeah, I really, you know, I don't, and I would say I don't enjoy the gym or running, but I enjoy the mental clarity that comes from it. So that's why I keep doing it. And those feelings that come along with feeling good about yourself and all of that. But like, that's from years of beating myself up.
Right.
In all of those things. So yeah, goals now look like those kind of goals. Not like I want to take my daughter to Disney or anything like that. Because I know those things will come along when I focus on me and hit my own personal goals.
Well, let's talk about what has come of all of this experience. So mm-hmm. you started this organization called Hero in the Fight.
Mm-hmm.
You're wearing the shirt.
Yep.
number one, what is it exactly? And two, at what point during your recovery did you decide you wanted to do this?
Yep. So even the word, you know, heroin, right? When I see it now, I see the word hero. It's less stigmatized. It doesn't hold the same weight that it used to for me. And that's what it comes down to. People with substance use disorders and anyone that's using a substance, we should care about them because they're in pain, right? Rather than chastise them or have this biased view that they're terrible people.
Right.
When you see me and talk to, when I talk about all the things that I've done, like I have a good heart. Like I'm a good person. I always was. I was just lost.
Mm-hmm.
I was in pain, right? And there's a lot of people like me, and they all have, you know, those qualities. So that's my focus, right? Is like I want to let people know that recovery is possible, and that you're not alone, and that it's okay not to be okay.
So I mean, what is it exactly? Like, is it Do you sponsor people in recovery? I mean, it could be a multitude of things.
It's so many things, Buff. It's really grown organically. We have a Facebook group page, Hero in the Fight, and people share their experience, strength, and hope with one another, as well as resources. And it all comes from things that I've been through that I don't want others to have to go through, mm-hmm. right? So the creation of Hero in the Fight was, I was about 90 days, right? And I was sitting up in Negley Park on a swing, overlooking the city of Harrisburg. And I thought, man, I want to be proud of my recovery. And I want to wear it. I want to wear it with pride. Mm-hmm. And I was like coming up with shirt ideas. And I came up with be a hero in the fight against addiction. And I created these shirts. I put them in a backpack. I walked from my recovery house up to the Capitol for Recovery Advocacy Day. And there's an organization called the RAISE Project. I had these flyers. I said, listen, every dollar we raise from this, I want to go towards Recovery House scholarships. Can we do it through your organization? They said, absolutely. And they gave me a seat at that table, right? And then in Lemoyne, there was a place called Val's Cafe. And Val passed away. But Val allowed us to have an event at her location where we raised money for those scholarships. And the catalyst for me to want to do that was because when I knew the decision I needed to make with my life was to go to a recovery house and not go back to the place where I could walk down the street.
Right.
You know? And I didn't have the money for that. We want to help empower individuals that are making the right decision in their lives, that are putting their best foot forward. Right. So that's how
that
started.
So with the scholarships, this is just curious. Like,
yeah.
Because let's be honest.
Yeah.
And you know firsthand, it's very, very difficult mm-hmm. to do what you did.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're not the only one to ever do it,
mm-hmm.
but, I mean, you've had to fail a few times before you really, you know, did it. So when you do a scholarship, when you sponsor someone or whatever
mm-hmm.
to go in one of those recovery houses, the one where you were begging your parents for that first $120,
mm-hmm.
do you guys pay that for them? Do you put food in their fridge, or do you actually hand them money?
No, we never hand them money, and we will pay. We keep it consistent. 2 weeks rent with security deposit, right? So we give them a chance to get a job, to get on their feet.
Mm-hmm.
And the places that we do it are with individuals that we know that oversee the funding and that are going to have their best interest in mind.
Right.
And most of them are personal friends that have been through some of the same situations I've been through and have some similar experiences, right? But that was like the first initial idea, right? It's like, wear this shirt with pride and raise money for Recovery House scholarships. And then as it went on, it's like organically blossomed into this beautiful thing. And it's just from doing things from the right place and so that people don't have to go through some of the similar things I went through. We've done poetry events, spoken word. We've had Thanksgiving drives, turkey drives. See, for me growing up, when my grandma passed away, holidays stopped being great for me, right? Holidays were great. And at a young age, my grandma passed, and they just weren't. Like, Thanksgiving dinner looked like my mom laboring, full of love, and then, you know, we would sit there and just watch TV and the four of us just eat the food. We didn't sit together at a dinner table,
mm-hmm.
right? And then as I got worse, holidays got worse because then I wasn't even doing those. I wasn't showing up for Christmas like I should for my daughter, right? And we started, like, my favorite event that we do pre-COVID that we'll probably do again is Thanksgiving Eve dance. And we do this dance where there's a lot of people in recovery that are in the same boat. When they go to a recovery house, they had to break away from their families, from their friends, and they're all alone, right? So we can provide a fun atmosphere and a positive experience. But not only do you have those individuals, but you have family members that lost loved ones. So Thanksgiving isn't going to be the same. They don't have their son or daughter at the table. Well, we can provide this awesome experience that they can hopefully carry with them into the next day and let them know that they're not gone, but they're still here with you in everything you do, right? And that's what it's all about for me.
Well, let me know if you need a DJ for that.
Absolutely. Appreciate
make
that.
Make it work. Bring you a photo booth, too.
My man.
Okay,
really
so...
Really appreciate that.
Well, let's talk... Okay, so that's amazing, and I don't think there's a single person who wouldn't agree with that's an amazing thing you do. Very selfless. Pay it forward. You know, I'm a big believer in that. When it comes to you, mm-hmm. at this point, you're, like we said, over four years clean. Mm-hmm. Do you get that itch still every once in a while?
Not as much. No. Not really not.
Do you remember the last time you thought about doing it?
I wouldn't say it's a... I know my mind, and if I start thinking about something, it'll take legs and grow. So, like, if I'm driving down 13th Street where I used to live, and I look over and think about the house that I could just knock on the door, right? I'm like, nah, we're not thinking about that. And then I drive, and I keep driving, and I change my thought process. But that's through years now of that experience. So, and for me, life was so bad that, like, I don't want to go back to any of that.
Is part of it, like... Because we even talked about you just got a new job.
Yeah.
And it's an awesome job.
Yeah.
But that's like, that takes up, what do you think in your new job, what's your hours? Is it 60 hours a week? 50 hours a week?
I'm very grateful for the job I have today.
But it's a lot, right?
It's not, it's Monday through Thursday.
Okay, that's not bad. But you're working there
hard. It used to be. Not Monday through Thursday.
And now you're in between that and you're in here on the fight. I mean, is part of, like, if someone's listening right now who has an issue, right? And maybe they don't want to seek help or something like that right now. Maybe they're like, I can try to do this myself. Mm-hmm. Maybe not the best idea, but is part of recovering, like, just keeping yourself as busy as possible? Is it like an idle hands thing? Like, if the second you have, like, downtime, like you said, your mind starts racing and all of a sudden you got legs.
For me, early on, it was like that for me. So I would go to meetings, surround myself around people that were positive. But I do stay busy and give back because of all of the rewards that it does for me.
Right.
And the opportunities I'm able to provide, or we're able to provide through Here on the Fight to other people. But... Yeah, my downtime looks like hanging out with buddies and making bets on a golf course, and the loser has to jump in the water, right? that's what downtime looks like for me. So it's still active and doing things, but it's just living and enjoying life in a different way today.
Yeah, and you never feel like you're missing out, because I mean, you cut everything, right? You don't drink. Nothing.
You know, there's like a sense of pride. It's like, you know. Cork and Fork, the same place that I was a server, I became a general manager.
Right.
Like, Nick believed in me, and he gave me an opportunity, and we were able to cultivate an atmosphere of recovery at the restaurant, right? So by the time I left, maybe we had 6 individuals in recovery and 2 family members in recovery working there. So this culture in the restaurant industry, which used to be, hey, we have this new drink special, try it, here's a straw, is now, you can try it if you want to try it, right? We're not going to force you to do anything.
Yeah.
And we're going to respect your recovery. And these are the tasting notes. It's this light and fruity, and it's airy.
And that's tough. You know, I didn't spend any time as a server, but, you know, I was in the bar industry for years as a DJ. And it's just, like, it's right there. Like, that's got to be so hard. For anyone in any type of recovery, but especially like alcohol, to be just, you're flooded by it. Like, your whole life is surrounded by it. Especially if you're a bartender, your life, I mean, that is your life. Booze is your life. So it's hard to, like, I know a few guys who got so many DUIs, like, they couldn't even, like, work at a bar. They wouldn't let them work in a bar. The judge said, you can't work at a bar anymore. Like, that's bad.
I know some people as well. It's like that.
That's bad. But it makes sense because they're constantly surrounded by it. And you know how it works. Shot for the customer, shot for me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And if your client likes you, you know, your customer likes you, hey, do a shot with me. Okay. Client's always right. Customer's always right. You know, I get it. Like, that's a tough... business to not, even if you're not doing it on purpose. Like subconsciously, you could be enabling people in that business.
My thought process is if you don't drink, and like that's badass, right? Mm-hmm. Like that's tougher to make the decision to be like, cheers, here's my water.
100%.
Right? And it's just like not feeling inferior or insecure of everybody else is doing it, right? But taking pride in the fact of what you're doing. Like, I'm proud that I'm in recovery. I'm proud that I don't drink.
Yeah, you know? my thing is not even close to as brave as you and everybody else, but like I have a group of friends and they are drinkers. They're big drinkers, right? Mm-hmm. And when I first moved here and I started to, you know, form my friend group and start hanging around with certain guys, I always felt the need that I had to because they were. And before you know it, I started having a crazy tolerance just because of, you know, just being with them for a couple years. And then one day I woke up, it's probably just because I got old and couldn't take hangovers anymore. But one day, like in my late 20s, I was like, I don't really want to do this anymore. Like I'll still go out and have drinks and stuff, but getting like really drunk. And I just started saying no. And then another person would join, and I'd watch it. Another person would join our friend group and be like, man, these guys, they drink so much. I go, you could just say no. And they're like, how do you say no? I go like this. No, I'm good.
Yeah.
And the guys, they'll pick on you and they'll call you all sorts of names, but they don't really care. It's more just ribbing.
You know? Yeah, no doubt. No
but,
doubt.
But it took me like 8 years to be like, mm-hmm. Oh, I could say no and it's cool. And now they know. See, and now like years later, after I started saying no, years later, they're just like, oh yeah, no, that's Puff. He doesn't drink as much.
It's yeah, cool. Yeah.
And that's fine. Yep. Like I said, not even close to your story, but kind of very similar. Like they just understand that's who I am.
Yep.
Just like everyone understands who you are.
Yeah.
Now, like, I just didn't want to feel like shit anymore. You had a whole different, yeah, you had like, a whole different issue.
Trust me, you don't want Dan to drink. And, you know, and a lot of people that were like the biggest partiers, they're like, man, I'm glad you took care of yourself. And I think, I'm like, wow, is that bad?
You know, and like, that's an interesting like avenue to go down, because when you hear that, mm-hmm. you're like, well, why didn't you say something to me?
You know,
does that bother you at all?
No.
Like, people weren't like,
they probably didn't know how to approach me.
Yeah, because I've been a part of like two, three interventions, mm-hmm. which, you know, I don't know if they work or not, but I've been a part of a couple of them, talking to people like, hey, we do care and mm-hmm. we want you to get better. So we're going to help you as any way we can. And so when someone tells you that, you're like, you could have told me then. Maybe it would have been a wake-up call. Probably not.
Probably but, not. I would have denied.
But you never know. You never
me.
Know if the yeah. right person that you really respect and admire maybe would have said something. And like I said, that could be a unicorn and maybe never would have happened. But you never know if just the right person that you like really respect said something to you. And you're like, oh, man, really? This is what people think of me? And this is what a guy that I or a girl that I really admires thinks of me? Mm-hmm. Okay. I got to change that. You ever think about that?
There were a few people that showed me they cared that I still to this day am like so grateful for, because I do think that a couple of those moments really helped lead up to me making the ultimate decision of like, that's it. I'm willing to do what it takes. Like the owner of the Melting Pot at the time, my substance use went to the point, it went from, well, I never use a drug at work to like, now I'm getting high at work every day.
Yeah.
Right. And they had to pull me in the office and said, you know, listen, you either need to go get help or you can't work here.
Yeah.
And, I was like, all right, I'll go get help. And I walked home and that was when I went to my first treatment facility. Right. And then while I was in that first treatment facility, I met a guy named Tim who shared his story. And I didn't think anybody was like me.
Mm-hmm.
No one was like me, right, in my mind. And he started sharing some things that he'd been through, hung out with a lot of people from CD East and Central Dauphin and Susquehanna. And I'm like, wow, he was hanging out with everyone that I did. And I started hearing some of the names and I'm like, this guy is just like me. He's been through, maybe I can do this.
Right.
Right? And I went, you know, I left that treatment facility and went back to using. But then I saw him at a meeting, and I saw him at a recovery center. He said, "Hey, man, it's so good to see you." So, like, I wouldn't have met Tim if it wasn't for Ben from the Melting Pot.
Right.
Right. So, like, those small things like that have you know, genuine act of love and care and concern, because he could have fired me.
Sure.
Helped introduce me to someone that very well might have, you know, that helped me find my voice. Like, I didn't speak about things I went through. Like, no, a lot of people didn't know the pain that I was carrying.
So, okay, so that's interesting. I thought you just one day you started talking about it, but that's not what happened.
It started off with me writing it in the journal. Like, I would journal about it, and, you know, when the Melting Pot told me I needed to go get help, and I walked home and I cried to my mom, you know, that was, I said, you know, I need help. Like, I need help. Mm. And she didn't know where to go. Talk to my dad. You know, they were like Gaudenzia, but there weren't resources as readily available as they are today back then. And, you know, even at that treatment facility, I would like sit around people, but I cared a lot about what you thought. So I wouldn't tell you about how I felt,
mm-hmm.
right? And all of those things, all of the pain and hurt, and, you know, counselor would try to get it out of me. But, you know, at that time, part of me wanted to be there, but at the same time, I didn't want to be there at all because I wanted to go back and use a substance.
So who convinced you to start talking about it instead of just writing it down?
I think, you know, when Tim spoke about what he went through, and that second facility where people were talking about the things that they've been through, sitting at a table and going to meetings. And as I would journal and write how I felt down and get that pain out, I saw people that I looked up to and respected doing the same. So, like, and then I opened my mouth, right, and started speaking. And I felt so much weight coming off of my chest every time I spoke that I kept doing it. And then I started to realize, right, like, people that speak up when they're going through things are the strongest people I know, because it really takes a lot to talk about the death of a loved one or suicidal thoughts or things that you've been through and that you've done in life. Like, there's some dark stuff that I've been through.
Yeah.
You know? And the more I speak about it, the more I hear others share what they've been through, and I realize, man, I'm not as unique as I once thought, right? So I've slowly found my voice, but you know, I encourage others to do the same.
So what's the ultimate goal, or do you even have one for Hero in the Fight, or do you think it's just gonna be a thing that continuously evolves?
You know, it I think it's gonna continuously evolve. There are, you know, it's just been organically beautiful, and I think it'll be more of the same. There are some things that I want to do. Like, next year, we want to be at the Harrisburg Senators ballpark doing a recovery day ball game again. Penn State campus in Harrisburg, do something there. But those are, like, smaller subsidies of the greater things that we're doing. My buddy Doug Rao with Blessed and Appreciative does a lot in the community, and we've teamed up many times to go to the Bethesda Mission on Christmas Day, and those are what it's all about for me, right? It's like going up to the Bethesda Mission Christmas Day, taking time out of my day to be around people that might not feel so much love on that day.
Right.
Right. And it's not even about giving them anything. It's about just being there and letting them know that they're loved and having a conversation and letting them know that they're, you know, we're human and we care. And we're here for you when you get out too.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Just all of those things. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I think that it's, to say it's inspiring is like an understatement. It really is. Like, you took a terrible decade
mm-hmm.
of your life, and you're turning it into the last 4 years of not just bettering yourself, but hopefully bettering other people's lives. And that's admirable, man. Most people, as much as that guy said you have to take care of yourself first, and he was right,
mm-hmm.
some people would say that's selfish, and it is to a point, there's that line of taking care of yourself and being selfish.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you got to that line probably, and you just went the exact opposite way and just doing selfless things. It's been a pleasure to hear your story, to be honest.
I really appreciate you giving me a platform to share my story.
Yeah. Right? So if people want to like join in the fight, if people, I mean, what you guys have, obviously the Facebook page, which is pretty big.
Yep.
You have a website?
Yeah. HeroInTheFight.org.
Makes sense.
And then my name on Facebook's Danny Albert. Personal message me. You know, what I've found is people that might not pick up the phone and make a phone call will send a message on Facebook.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
So everyone's welcome to message me. You know, I'm on the other side.
In terms of how people can help, I mean...
Yeah.
How can someone help the situation?
We have an email, herointhefight@gmail.com. If you would like to join us at an event, you want to help out Thanksgiving Initiative, you want to help out around the holidays, anything that we're doing, just send an email to me, and we'd love to have you out there, right? Because together we can do more than we can do alone, right? I don't do all this myself.
Right.
I have so many people that have been through a lot of things and that just care, that genuinely care. Mm-hmm. And we're able to go out in the community and care and love on other people.
How about your parents now? Do they trust you?
Yep. Good. For Christmas, my dad gave me $500 cash.
Hey, all right.
Right? And you're talking about not wanting to give me cash at all, to give me $500 cash. That's
saying a lot.
It is saying a lot.
Don't get me wrong. $500 cash is awesome.
Yeah.
But it symbolizes more. And I'm sure that's why he did it too.
Yes.
Because back in the day, $500 cash might have killed you.
Oh, yeah.
But
for sure.
Yeah, but now that's awesome. That's a good place to end right there.
Thanks, Bob.
Hey, man, it was a pleasure. Thank you very much for coming in and telling your story. I'm sure you help people more than you know.
I appreciate you.
All right. Thank you. That's another podcast.